Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Thought Grenades with Robert Thompson and Mike Neese on Blog Talk Radio. Robert is the author of The Offsite, Leadership Challenge Fable, and the founder of LeaderInsideOut.com.
And welcome once again to Thought Grenades with Robert Thompson and co-host Mike Neese. This is Monday, March 23, 2015. And of course, this is Robert Thompson coming to you live from the beautiful San Francisco Bay, as we do each and every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific time. Of course, joining me from the shores of Lake Michigan, my good friend and co-host, Mike Neese. Mike, how was your weekend?
Very, very good. Thanks, Robert.
Good. Are you still seeing that yellow orb up in the sky?
No, it's taking a couple days off, just relaxing.
It's like white out there again. All right.
It looks like a great show.
We've got a great show once again today. We continue our Leadership for the Common Good theme with Diamone Argis. He's the original Roving Listener. It's a great title, Roving Listener. As a neighbor and staff member of the Broadway United Methodist Church in Indianapolis, his role is to listen and discover the gifts, passions, and dreams of citizens in his community and to find ways to utilize them in order to build community, economy, and mutual delight. Now, I used to think that those kinds of things would be done by elected officials, right? Wouldn't they be our roving listeners and going around trying to find out what we need and fill that gap? Anyway, folks, if you have a question or a thought to share, please call in at 347-989-0965. That number again is 347-989-0965. And never miss a session by subscribing to Thought Grenades on iTunes. That way, Mike and I are right there on your mobile device. If you're looking for something practical, simple and effective, stay right here. Diamone, it's good to have you on. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Hey, thank you guys.
Roving listener. Tell me about a roving listener. How do I get a job that's a roving listener? Tell me what you do out there in the community, Diamone.
Well, really just listen is the biggest and foremost thing. One of the things that I realized when I had moved to Indianapolis from Chicago, people told me not to move in this neighborhood. And one of the things I started to listen for is people's gifts. You know, people said people didn't have gifts around there, and so that's what I was set out to discover.
Yeah.
But the second part of the listening is how do you connect people together that have same passions and that normally would never meet each other.
Right, right.
And then the third part of that, we celebrate that.
Go ahead.
I said we celebrate
that. You do what?
That idea. We celebrate the idea that people are coming together to share their gifts.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I just, you know, it's amazing that you're out there doing this. I mean, listening is something that Mike and I have taught in our leadership work for years now, and it's one of the weakest kinds of skill sets that people have out there. They hear people, but they don't really listen. So how did you come to being this gifted listener?
Well, it was really when I was five, I had a kind of a speech impediment, and actually probably didn't start talking to four or five, but it was my grandfather that constantly told stories about community. And the act of listening, I just love to sit on his lap and like listen to the stories he would tell. And there were a lot of stories told in my house, but it wasn't until like 2000 I met this pastor and a good friend of mine, like my best friend, Reverend Mike Mather, who uncovered that in me. It was something that I was already doing.
Yeah, but he was able to have you be able to see this is what you were doing, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was actually kind of a roving listener himself, I would think.
He was into the listening thing. He was listening to his congregants and so on, huh?
Yeah, and his neighbors. When I first met him, the only time I would see him in the church is on the couple hours on Sunday, but he always spent time out in homes of people, and some of those people were my family, and so that just intrigued me.
Sure.
Yeah.
Timon, but you use your listening in a special way. You're listening for the gifts that people have. Can you tell us a little bit about that process? How do you probe to find out, or you know, what's the process for discovering the gifts?
Well, one of the things, it was me first learning about gifts that turned everything over for me. I mean, you can listen for a lot of things, and most of the times in places where people are marginalized, the only thing they can think about is what people have need for. And,
yes.
You know, and when my first house I went into, you know, I thought, oh, yeah, I got this handled. And I went in and I asked the person for their gift, and they looked at me like I was just like from somewhere else. And it took me a minute to figure it out, a few weeks, that I realized that no one has ever just asked somebody for this. So I said, I'll shut up. And I just started hanging out with people, and I started observing. And the first time, the first house that I went to, I went back, and a granddaughter of the grandmother that was in the house that I was in, that who she said she didn't know her gift, the granddaughter came up and said, I'll show you her gift. She brings out a piece of pie. And I was like, oh, my God, this is what we need to do. How do we hold questions and just observe where people are already activated and find joy in their life?
Very, very cool.
Wow, very cool. Pie is a gift. I have to tell you, there's pie that I've had that is definitely a gift. In my research, before we come on the air here, I understand that the church that you're working with cut back on feeding people and doing summer programs for kids. And,
yes.
And yet that's a positive thing. Talk about that.
Well, kind of going back to the only thing that in the past, when I first met Mike, he told me a story about doing charity from the church, and he was a big part of it, he would say, that they did all these really cool programs. Lily Endowment is our neighbor, you know, a few blocks away, and they would support this work. We would support 150 kids. And at one point, Mike's last 9 months there before he come back at Broadway, where we at now, he did 9 funerals for 9 young men, all under the age of 24. And he realized that we can do all the cool program we want, but until we stop helping people, a few people beat the odds and help change the odds for everybody, that's when we make a difference. And that thing in 2000, that little statement, has changed the way we've been doing our work at Broadway now. So it's really important. A lot of times when people would come into these places, of course they feel isolated. They feel, you know, just down and out. But it doesn't mean that they don't have gifts. And we have never asked them to give something, to give a part of who they are to us.
Sure.
You know, they say it's better to give and to receive, but we're always on the giving end of things.
Yes. Well, that would be my second question. So, you discover gifts and help people discover their gifts. How do you help them express those gifts? And what's the mechanism again? I mean, if you help me to discover that gift, that's really part of my inner strength. What's the avenue, or what's the process to help me find a place to express that more often?
Well, one is, I think, asking people to use it, but first you have to see it. You know, the lady with the pie, she just was doing it every day. And she would actually sell some of her pies to the churches and that were around during the holidays. But it wasn't until we had shared with her that we see this in you and celebrated that, and then asked her to use it with us.
Brilliant.
And it's very simple in a sense, but it's hard because our lives are like structured where you got to do A to B to C to D to get to something, and that can be hard. But sometimes people need to see it right now.
Right. Right. That's. I guess that was my question. It seems to me, doing a little research on the website and stuff too, it seems to me that there was also a certain amount of community building involved there so that you had a place, and I don't mean physically a place, but you created that environment where people would share their gifts more freely. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that is really true. Like, I would go from house to house, block by block, and I would find from the youngest to the oldest and discover their gifts. But at the end of the week, I would find there's a host on every block or every little 2 or 3 block radius, and I would ask them to host the meal. A lot of times what we did was if we hosted those meals at the church, then it would look like the church, this is what the church is doing. But I lived in that community, and that community is vibrant. But no one had ever said, can we have meetings at the house? And so I found out that's where biggest community is being,
that's great,
that is already being shared. And one more little thing out of that is when we would invite people from churches, mainly ours, and the Community Development Corporation that supported us. And before they walked through that door, I said that you cannot give your opinion. You can ask discerning questions about people's gifts. That became important because it gave neighbors a sense of agency together. And I tell you, we had some of the biggest parties ever.
That's great.
That's good. That's called celebration. And celebration
is
a useful leadership tool. Yeah. What kind of answers do you get from people as you go door to door and ask them about gifts once they get through the, they don't understand. They get to a place of understanding, you know, that's what I, what are you getting from people?
So sometimes the initial gift looks like something physical, right? So some people, like I'm a gardener, my friend, Miss Jackson, very beautiful spirit. She just wonderful lady. Lived in that community a long time, and we know her as a gardener. One day we had one of our meals. The gardeners would get together, and just something pretty bad happened with somebody else. And she said, "Honey, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it." The next time I saw her, I said, "Man, how did you solve this issue?" And she said, "Honey, my call is to heal the broken."
Oh
man. And, you know, this stuff takes practice, too, because I've been knowing her for, like, 3 or 4 years prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wow. So I'm kind of awestruck here, thinking about your community. How do you interact with the community officials, the elected officials, the police, fire, and so on? How does that get involved?
It does get involved, but it doesn't come from the traditional sense where we would say, "Well, you need to listen to this and want you to do this." You know, a lot of the first like 5 or 6 years, I spent a lot of time in the community, and I didn't really go anywhere else. But then my job description changed, and part of that was I had to hang out at a bar called the Chatterbox, where some of these folks would hang out at, and my job was to tell 3 stories. Of people that live in my community, get 3 stories of the people I meet, and then connect them together to have relationships in the house, not about anything about politics, but about their own gifts. So people that cared about gardening hung out with Miss Rose, who never would have met Miss Rose, never would have even looked at her until they sat on the porch. And then when they leave each other, they're celebrating each other.
Sure. That's very
and
cool.
So that's a practice. That is a practice I often use in places.
What were some of the more unusual gifts that you found? Anything surprise you?
Oh yeah. So the healers in our place. Now we start looking for healers. Oh man, that my friend Montel, young guy, kicked out of school. And when he was like 15 and had a letter and certificate of completion because of his disability, he says, just lost. So his grandmother, we had a meal. We always do these meals. You kind of hear this theme. And we go around and share what we think that person's gift is. And his grandmother, Ms. Nora O'Bannon, said to everybody that Montel's a healer. The healers were something special in our place. But some of these things are cooks. people that care about young people, roving, what illustrators, people that illustrate people's gifts. There were people like me already there that illustrated people's gifts and brought them up. Teachers, not teachers like in the academic sense, but people that taught, that spent their lives, and as they would say, that I would die if I don't do this.
Mm. Mm. That's passion. Any jobs, actual jobs, come from this in the community?
Well, I wouldn't say jobs, but some jobs. But I would say careers and vocations started to pop up.
Mm.
One of those, I name her the animator of the spirit. A friend of mine, Trina Evans, is kind of works closely with us now. But she's a mom of seven, single mom, grandmother, 37, 38, and quietest person I ever know. One of the best connectors I ever seen.
Mm.
And she show up. So now one of the things she's doing is like she's doing something. She's doing a lot of consulting about her gift. You know, so.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, there were several things. Montel itself, who I was telling you about as a healer, you know, he goes around and kind of rates nursing homes. And he does that, and he works kind of in, he does some consulting and stuff around healing
sure.
and community building. So we have a lot of community builders coming out of that. That's kind of the biggest thing that's coming out. But there are a whole bunch of things when people meet each other. You know, I remember Trina hired a couple of young people, and we have like 30 young people in our neighborhood who actually get paid to be listeners and connectors and celebrators. And so instead of doing the summer program like we did, what we did is say, we're not going to help 150 people. We're actually going to figure out how do we change the odds for everybody. Now, I don't know if we reached that goal. I mean, we're far away from that.
Sure.
But it is a different answer from just saying, let's throw, you know, $20,000 for a summer and let kids do math. Instead, why don't we cook them up with the math people in our neighborhood?
Exactly. Yep. It sounds to me, again, forgive my naivety here, but are you working in a defined neighborhood? I mean, are there others like you working in other neighborhoods? Tell me a little bit about the whole movement around this, discovering gifted.
Well, the original start was the 4-block radius around Broadway United Methodist.
Okay.
Kind of 30 blocks from Indianapolis, about 4,000 people lived there. And I mean it's place-based work is kind of our thing, but it doesn't look like that everywhere. So
yes.
And another place that has done it in Macon, Georgia. They've been hiring young people and families to Centenary Church is doing that in Macon. Kentucky, Eastern Kentucky, like Boyd County and Lawrence County, a lady who's fabulous. She is fabulous. She is organized in a rural place that people share their gifts. And, you know, we've kind of, I don't know, for some reason, I just get to go around and meet these folks. And they say, hey, I think I want to do this too. And so the key to it, though, is how an institution carries itself and how it builds structure around this.
Yes.
Right. And that was the key for us. And as we were learning, other people came to us and wanted to learn. Eastern Oregon, Trenton is doing something similar. I heard there was a place in Seattle, or Vancouver, I should say, doing something similar. Peter Block told me that from a...
Wonderful. Is it larger than your own?
Spreading,
When you talk about institutions, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm hearing in your case, it happens to be your church. Is it largely a faith-based movement?
No. They're not. You mean spread over, you mean? For us, it is. But no, it's not something that that you have to be a church to do it. Actually, to me, I think churches could do it really well, but I think there are other people that wrap their structures around it. I was thinking Eastern Kentucky is the place. It's not a church. Now, are churches mm-hmm. involved? Yes. But the structure actually come the DD Council. Oh, in Georgia, who supports the DD Council there, the Council on Developmental Disabilities, they have a project called the Real Communities, where they're not focusing on people's disability, but they're focusing on their gifts. But they need to rely mm-hmm. on community to do it. And so here's a state organization that is really doing it well. And kind of, to me, has led the charge. But here was the cool thing about it. The Eric Jacobson, Caitlin, who are part of that thing in Georgia, they came and stayed with us. Just clopped in the houses. And, I mean, what institution does that? Say, we're going to take a learning journey to learn something. You know, most of those places, in my neighborhood, would say, well, we don't like institutions because they don't listen. Well, I think that's the big part of it. If we can set our structures up to have spaces, safe spaces for each of us to listen to each other.
Very good.
Now, are you now training some of these people to become more effective listeners, or are you just saying go listen and find out gifts and it spreads that way? Is there structure to what you're doing?
Well, yeah, I have been for the last about four years, I've been doing some consultant. So I have a contract with that county, with Georgia, and been doing that for 4 years. But I go around to travel all over, and it is structure to it. And here's the simple structure first. You know, if you're going to do this, you have to take away the things that hadn't been working. Because one of the things I discovered that institutions hold on and try to fix things that are broken. You know, and man, this was true with our church. You know, we had to let go of the summer program and let go of fixing people and listen to people. The other thing that we do is sometimes gifts happen in the most unusual places. And sometimes you just have to take a journey out to find it.
Sure.
There is, like at Candler, I did some, every year I go do a class and with Dr. Ellison, and there is kind of some academic structure that we created, but it is really simple. The first thing is create a structure that fits this, and then practice it. Practice.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, you're basically teaching leadership, Damon, so without a license, you're teaching leadership without a license. Are you a big reader?
No, I'm not a big reader because my dyslexia and some type of processing thing.
Sure. Yeah, so you haven't read all the leadership books that are out there that even some of us have written. So, that said, you are one hell of a leader. when we started this theme, Leadership the Common Good, we wanted to talk to real leaders doing real things out there in the real world, getting real results. And, you know, that phrase defines what you've been doing for quite a while. And, I'm actually very pleased. I'm honored that you would take the time to be with us because you're making such a difference in your community. So my next question comes, and I know we have some listeners going, okay, so, you know, Robert and Mike, you've been talking about restorative justice, you've been talking about time banking, you've been, you know, talking about all these different things going on in the community that some people are aware of, but not everybody and not enough people are aware of. And one more time, Diamond, what you're doing should become more the awareness out there in the United States or the world should become more to listen. So here's the thing. Could this have helped in Ferguson and other hotspots?
Oh, man. you know what I say about what about this? Yes, the answer is yes. And it is not to go to Ferguson and do it, but to work in your own backyards to prevent that. Because while Ferguson is going on, there are a whole bunch of those things that keep popping up. And you know, one of the things that I found out is that everybody has something to offer. Not something to say, but something to offer. We spend so much time spending time doing things about words, and what I look for is what do people already get off the couch to do and make a difference, and let's build capacity there. Simple. It's the simple thing, because once people can see it, they'll do more of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, on a very practical thing too, Dimon, are you how is the effort sustained? And I mean, financially, are you grant based? Are you is there a place people can go and help out with this?
Well, it's kind of entrepreneurial based, right?
Okay.
I mean, in relationship based, and yes, the church is the place, right? The church is the place that can do that, or any of your places in people's neighborhoods who have a willingness to see people and say, ask them to say, hey, if there is some money, can we put it here to do this? But the other thing is, now, like me, I'm not paid as the Rover Listener. I'm actually volunteer staff, and I'm a member of the church. But one of the things that I do is just when I meet people, when I match them up, I find out that money already exchanges hands. You know, the problem is if I say I wanted to control that, now I can prod it. I say, maybe you should give this money here. And then one of the things we do at the church, why Reverend Mike changed my job description, one of the stories that kind of come out of that was me getting invited to, at the bar, me getting invited to come talk at a Sunday school, which a lady from my friend Mag now is, was at worked for the State Department of Health, kind of the child maternity ward. And she got up and said, we've been trying to make the state healthier and for 20-something years, and we failed. She said, studies show that the stuff you do build that. So she came over and talked to Mike, which I failed to tell him that she was calling. And you can imagine when somebody from the State Department of Health called your church, Mike was terrified. Well, she ended up coming there and saying, look, we got $250,000 for the Rockefeller, from the Rockefeller grant, and we'd like to give it to you. And some things went on. We negotiated. And what was important about that relationship is that our neighbors, we have guiding principles. And one of those guiding principles, because we're poor, is that money must flow to the hands of people and the gifted people that live there.
Yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, we just have a minute left or so. So obviously we're running out of time. But I just thought, when you go in and talk to people about their gifts, and I know that you said, you know, when they're adults that they tend to stare at you for a bit. They don't quite get it. When you talk to the kids in Sunday school or young kids hanging out, whatever, and you ask them about their gift, do the very young ones know their gift? And then over a period of time, say a year, two, five, they forget about their gift?
Yeah, I think that's been the case. I mean, even in my own self, my mom reminded me yesterday that I was always the roving listener. Right? But kids, you really don't have to ask.
Good.
All we have to do is look and tell them it.
Good
point.
Yeah, there's something about society that drains that from us over a period of time. Dimon, we only have a minute left, and I want to respect your time. How can people get a hold of you?
Well, there's a couple of ways. My website called The Learning Tree will be launching, and I'll send you info for that. But also BroadwayUMC.org.
Okay. BroadwayUMC.org. Okay.
Yeah. And then we have a Facebook page called The Learning Tree and The Roving Listener, where people kind of blog about stuff.
Fabulous.
Okay.
Fabulous.
The Roving Listener and The Learning Tree, both Facebook pages to go in and like?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, cool. All right.
Wonderful.
Dimon, thanks so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank
Keep
you.
Up the
thank
good
you,
work.
Michael and Robert.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care. Mike, next week we continue our Leadership for the Common Good theme with Amy Moritz. She's the director of the Center for Transforming Communities in Memphis, Tennessee. What's going on in your neighborhood that is changing everything for those involved? Let's get them on the show. Just send me a note and share your story. This is Robert Thompson for Mike Neese. Thanks for listening to Thought Grenades for Monday, March 23, 2015.
Thanks for listening to Thought Grenades with Robert Thompson and Mike Neese. Catch us live every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on Blog Talk Radio or listen anytime you wish on iTunes.